You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for downloading this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. Real treat for you this week. The founding father of the podcast, Dan Killick, makes a long-awaited return. First time I've seen him face-to-face for a very long time, so that was great to catch up with Dan. And we also this morning spoke with Warren Gatland, which is one of those interviews that we have been dying to secure for a very long time. So that was massively exciting. That's going to come out later in the week. I'm actually going to put out on Wednesday. Ignore the part in this podcast where I say it's going to come out on Thursday. It's going to come out Wednesday this week. And just to make sure that you don't miss out whenever it comes out, it will be Wednesday. But just to make sure you don't miss out, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. So that is coming out later in this week. There's a little clip of that coming up at the end of me waffling here. So you can have a little preview into what that's going to be like, but we were hugely excited to do that and speak with him. So we spent a bit of time in this podcast just kind of talking what that experience was like, and we also look back at the Cardiff versus Dragons game. We also look at the other games from this weekend. Scarlets getting a win against Zebra and a draw for the Ospreys, so all of that. And then we look at the mess that is kind of club rugby in England at the moment, and look at what the potential ramifications for that might be for the Welsh sides in the long run. So a bit of me and Dan kind of, having a little wander and thinking about what some potential solutions to that might be. But we certainly enjoyed kind of doing that, even though it's a very strange situation. And finally, we looked ahead to Wayne Pivak naming his squad and some of the players that we'd like to see in there. So, great to have Dan back on the pod. And, big thanks to him for doing that. And thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks for the feedback on the Scott Otten episode as well. That was great. Really nice to hear those positive comments that people have messaged me. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to that one, go back and have a listen now. Because, it was really fascinating to chat to Scott about how difficult he's found life post retiring and the kind of mental journey that he's been on at various stages after retiring, and luckily he's in a really good place now, which we're really happy about. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that one, go back and have a listen. And as I say, the Warren Gatland one is coming out on Wednesday.
There's a couple of things that I found a challenge in Wales over the time that I were there. I know that the regions are always talking about the amount of money that, they will make a massive difference. And I'll give you an example. I said, in Wales when I was there, we were spending £5 million on foreign players, about 30-odd players. And my argument to them was that, we end up spending money on journeymen from the Southern Hemisphere who played some Super Rugby, and we're stopping potentially the the development of some youngsters in our regions and who don't get a chance because we're playing 27, 28-year-olds. You walk away from it and go, I'm not going to do this again. It's it's too tough. It's the criticism, the challenges. But then you reflect back and go, just how magnificent the Lions is as a concept. You're down to 40 men after 17 minutes and playing international, and we hung in there, just kept there. And Mike Phillips has scored a great try. Stephen Jones is probably a kick he should have kicked. I look back on that and think, has he rushed that a little bit? Not kicking the conversion. And then, right in full time, we have another chance, and Lee Halfpenny's kick just drops under the bar. So,
welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. A very special guest for you this week, none other than the Gavin Henson of Welsh Rugby Podcasts. We've dragged him out of his office, kicking and screaming, taking time away from selling houses to the rich and famous. Daniel Killick is back. How are you, Dan?
Really good. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've been back on, but also back at your home.
Exactly. Yes, the first time we've done a face-to-face podcast in close to 3 years,
and it feels good.
It does feel good. It does feel good. And obviously, you don't get out of bed for less than the big bucks, do you? But the lure of interviewing Warren Gatland was what managed to tempt you back into doing a face-to-face this week. How did you find that this morning, interviewing the big man?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was pretty nervous on the drive down to your house, just thinking, what is Warren Gatland going to be like? And also, how have we got Warren Gatland coming on the podcast? Because he doesn't do podcasts.
Doesn't do much media, does he?
No, it's not. He's not well known for that. So, yeah, it was pretty nerve-wracking, and it started off, didn't it? I mean,
to say it was nerve-wracking, I thought I had the audio. So as every long-term listener knows, I have a habit of cocking up the audio, particularly when we have an interesting guest on. But I thought it was sorted this time, and within a second of him being on, I was like, that's echoey, isn't it? Like, yep. Oh, God. And then I spent whatever it was, what felt like an age.
It did feel like, it felt like about an hour.
It was, in actual fact, I think it was about 90 seconds trying to rejig the audio setup. Meanwhile, you said nothing.
Yeah.
I sat there gurning at him.
I did. I looked at him and thought, do I make small talk here? Or do I just remain silent? And I went with the silence. But it was a lot. It felt long, didn't it? And I was thinking, Jed, come on, get this microphone going. And then you drop something at one point, and I was thinking was, what is Gatland thinking?
I know.
So an interesting start.
But he was great, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, he was so good, wasn't he? Really, really great. Great value. Yeah, loved it. Still sort of bouncing now, really, from it, aren't we?
Yeah, I feel like the kind of adrenaline has drained out of me a bit, which is why I thought we'd relive a bit of that interview first before we start talking about the Dragons' defeat at Cardiff. All of this to come, listeners. Of course, we'll be having a roundup from the whatever we're called now, the BTK UFC, and we'll be looking at that. We'll also have a look at the state of club rugby as a whole, which, when you look on the English side of the bridge, has taken another turn for the worse. So keen to get your thoughts on that, Dan, as well. But of course, if you are looking for the Warren Gatland interview, that will be out on Thursday this week. So make sure you have a listen. Really enjoyed chatting to him, and he was in very honest form, wasn't he? There was kind of no holding back, I would say.
Yeah, it was couldn't have been better, could it? He was really honest and open and frank with his answers. You got a good feel as well for the real Warren Gatland, I suppose. I think he was keen to get that across, wasn't he? That there's a different side to him, and also I guess that'll be coming out more, won't it, on that tour. He said that, and he's keen to get that across with a load of tales. So yeah, it's a really good listen.
It is, yeah. So yeah, that'll be out later in the week. And if you want to get tickets to the tour, you can do that by going to our Twitter page, and there is a link on there to all four
of the venues if you fancy seeing an evening with Warren Gatland in Cardiff, Swansea, Llandudno, or Aberystwyth. Right then, Daniel, on to this week's matters. Shall we start with Cardiff Dragons? My side losing to the side that you secretly support?
Murph side.
Well, I don't even know that Murph does, actually. Maybe now they're called Cardiff again. Murph side is the Wanderers, mate. Murph side is the Wanderers.
Yeah, you're right.
Above everything.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what did you make of that? Let's start as a spectacle. How did you find that one as an East Wales derby?
I quite enjoyed the game. But I say quite. It was lacking. I think it was lacking in quality, really.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah, if I'm honest. I thought there was some good sort of, you know, there was some good bits in part, but it was so bitty. It was very stop-start. You know, it was an okay crowd, wasn't there? But still, I think it was lacking off the field and lacking on the field, really. It was a bit of a sort of, bit of a turgid affair, really.
Yeah, turgid is probably about right, actually. I think it was two sides who were... have been struggling in terms of building any kind of consistency. Both have had good wins against Munster and otherwise have not had a huge amount to cheer. Dragons came close against the Sharks at home, but it kind of showed, you know, I think a disappointing result for both of them last week. And it was again a bit of a cagey affair. I just feel like that was a missed opportunity for the Dragons, looking at it with my one-eyed dragon perspective. I would say that's a missed opportunity because Cardiff have been low on confidence, low on form. Yes, there's quality in their side, and we'll talk about Thomas Young and Faletau and those players who really kind of shone, but I really can't help but think it was a missed opportunity. And it just, you know, there were chances. They got themselves back in the game, and then that period in the second half where we're kind of all over them, really, for 20 minutes, and that really made the wind count, well, should have made the wind count. Made it count in terms of territory. You just don't look clinical when it comes to scoring tries. And when you concede three tries in the first half, you're always going to be struggling.
Yeah, I agree. First half made it too difficult for the Dragons to the game. The game had essentially moved away from them, hadn't it? Moved away from you boys. But I expected more from the Dragons. I thought it would be a real stern test for Cardiff, and it just wasn't really. There wasn't enough from the Dragons. I think. You know, that could have been a game, and probably should have been a game, where your boys could have won and got that elusive win, which hasn't come.
Yeah.
For you.
And I look at that pack and think that, you know, and there were lots of really good individual performances by the Dragons in the pack. I thought Bradley Roberts, I will get his name right rather than calling him Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah.
I always fantastic, real ball of energy, had a really good game. Rowlands was brilliant again. Sayuli was, you know, putting a massive shift around the loose. So, you know, there was lots of that. And I just think that this pack is a pack that should be competing with the likes of Cardiff and giving us a platform to go and win these games. So definitely a missed opportunity as far as I'm concerned. Who shone in the blue and black for you? This is what you miss about this podcast, isn't it? You love highlighting the players who put in a big shift.
Yeah, I really do. I think that Youngs was... in the back row was excellent, really, really good. I was so impressed actually with him. I think that he kept Cardiff ticking, did some really clever stuff off the ball. He was slowing things up. He was the difference, the real difference for me. And I think honestly, without him, I think it would have been a very, very different, scoreline. So mighty impressed with him. I thought, you know, Turnbull, as always, gets through so much work, doesn't he? Such, you know, all the donkey work. And he's almost two players out there. It's never the flashy stuff, as always, is it? But just so consistent. Josh Adams took his try really well.
Yeah.
Question marks over the defence.
Generous defending, I would say. But yeah, but I mean, we know.
Killer instinct.
Yeah, he is like a shark, isn't he? Like he... smells a sniff of weakness and he goes through it.
Yeah, and the big man in the front row had some bulldozing runs, which it just shows how hard he is to stop picking those angles. And that's what we want to see from Carey, isn't it?
Absolutely.
He's so difficult to stop, and he looks hungry. You know, he's looking fitter. And there's still more to come. I think he's probably still at sort of 80%, I feel.
The difficulty is, I find, when you're gauging performances on the Welsh derbies, is that sometimes that quality is that bit lower, like we were saying. And I think now it's important that he gets a couple of decent performances in for Cardiff. I expect him to be in the autumn squad, and we're going to talk about that squad on this pod. You know, a few players who you'd like to see in there. So I think it's next week Pivac announces that. So expect to see him in there, but again, it'd just be great to see him build some form. And it, you know, putting in a big performance yesterday will no doubt help, but if he can kind of continue to build on that, because he's at that interesting stage in his career now, as he's not the bright young prospect anymore. He's a player with quite a few international caps to his name, and one that you want to see kick on and really be, you know, a bit of a household name when it comes to international rugby.
Yeah, it is. It's huge 2 years for him really now, isn't it? And yeah, I just think we've got to see more from him, and you know, consistency with that. I suppose him being picked as well is going to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Keep his fitness. He's definitely a talent. He's got a point of difference, isn't he? And yeah, let's hope that we can really see that now from him.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I found frustrating in the game, and again, this is, you know, what, I've got Murph's got the week off to stop ranting about referees, but regardless of kind of individual decisions, it was another stop-start affair, and stuff like that, Rodri Williams sin binning, like, it's so unlucky. And I can't, if that had been made in real time, I would have less of a concern with it. But to flag it back for that, it just feels like we're back in this stop-start, over to the video referee for the, you know, these minor infringements. And it just, it sucks the life out of it. It sucks the life and the tempo and the atmosphere out of a game. I'm not saying that, you know, you should let all decisions go, but I still think we've got to find a better way of making the TMO interventions less intrusive.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, the game, when the game is struggling a little to be as a spectacle,
yeah,
these things have to be looked at, and they can, yeah, they really slow things up, don't they? And yeah, you can make a game or break a game, can't you, with those decisions? That's how fine it is.
Mm.
And a lot of the time they're getting it wrong. Spectacle's almost gone then with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just having a look at some of the other results from the weekend. 16-all draw, I think it was 16-all for the Ospreys, who seem to be becoming a bit of a recurring theme. Two draws out of their first, whatever it is, four or five games. They, to me, feel like, it's weird saying this, but obviously the Stormers are a tough side. They're the current defending champions. How does that feel as a result, do you think? Kind of getting, you know, 16-all, it feels like, again, is that a missed opportunity, or is that one where they were looking at it in the sessions on Monday and saying, actually, we'll look back at that one as a good result?
They're a very tough side, aren't they? And I think it's not a bad result, but you've got to be looking at, there has to be a win, doesn't it? It's at home. You've got to be looking at getting a win there, I feel. So looking back at the tapes on Monday, I don't think they'll be ultimately too disappointed. But I think almost you've got to be, really.
Mm.
What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think it is, again, to, you know, without dwelling on refereeing too much, some dubious decisions in there. And yeah, referee, I don't know who he reminds me of. He looks like he should just be like a bit of a bad guy in a Disney film. He looks like, you know, some kind of evil prince. But yeah, I felt like they had a few bum calls in the first half. But anyway, that aside, I think when you look back at the end of the season, they'll probably go, you know, that's not a bad result. Stormers, I think, had won all of their games up until this point, so actually, it's not bad.
Mm. Because there's a game or two earlier on which the Ospreys should have won.
Yes.
It makes this game, yeah, that's probably a bit unfair. It's a good result. But yeah, the win should have come a couple of games.
Yeah,
if they'd have
beaten the Scarlets on the first day of the season, and, you know, put that one to bed, I think they would be looking back. And if they'd have beaten the Lions at home,
yes,
as well, which games which were they had won, really, I think they'd be looking back at this going, right, fine.
Yeah,
a draw against the defending champions, tough side, that's not bad going. However, what I am interested to see, they still look like they've got the ingredients, if you like, to be the most competitive side. So I think it's all about what happens now. You know, still looking at it, they've got Mean Pack, they're starting to score, they're starting to click a little bit more behind the scrum. Tough night in Swansea on Friday night. It was absolutely lashing it down, and Myler at 10 naturally played a much more kicking game than you'd expect from Anscombe or Walsh when they're in there. So I do think things will start to click for the Ospreys, and I'm just really intrigued to see how they go in Europe later on in the season, because I think that would be a massive boost. How long has it been since we've had a Welsh side have a good crack at Europe? We all kind of enjoyed the Cardiff Dirty Dozen, you know, players coming from here, there and everywhere last December, but we've not had a meaningful run in Europe, certainly not in the Heineken Cup, for a very long time.
Yeah, that'd be really exciting to see one of the Welsh sides go well in Europe, wouldn't it? And I think the Ospreys, I'm excited to see what they can do. They do seem to be building something. It hasn't fully clicked yet, is it? The backs are starting to play with a bit more. There's more coming from
ambition,
them, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is more ambition. They're starting to click a little bit more. They're trying different things. I think that's a big part. And if you try and things will eventually, they'll eventually happen, won't they? They're not afraid to. I guess at the moment, what they're trying isn't quite coming off. You know, you've got one in four things are coming off, but that'll change because they're changing the style. And the pack pack's hard, isn't it? It's a hard, gnarly pack. I think that can go up a level as well, and they can scrummage well.
Yeah.
And if you can scrummage well, you've then got a chance. And the line out, you know, the line out can get better, but they've got a line out that can function. So yeah. they've got the ingredients to go well, haven't they?
Yeah, I think so. And you're absolutely right with the set piece. You know, it just gives you that foundation, doesn't it? And I thought, to go back to some of those referencings, I thought the ref gave the Stormers a bit of a way out in the first half on the scrummage in front. Not that I'm in any way an expert about these things, but definitely other games you'd have seen the Ospreys getting penalties, and towards the end of the half that started to change. So I think they'll, you know, those things will hold you, will serve you well. If you've got a gnarly pack and a good set piece, the rest you can kind of build on. So while it's been a bit of a stuttering start for the Ospreys, I do think there's something that they can work with as we go into the deeper into the season. Scarlet's got their first win of the year with a win over Zebra. Full disclosure, haven't seen this game. Didn't have time to catch this one before we recorded. And I mean, it's a game you'd expect them to win at home to Zebra. Zebra, you know, by far and away the weakest side in the league. And what have you made of the Scarlet's start to the season, Dan? You know, it must be, you'd have felt there was perhaps a bit more optimism around the camp going into the season. What have you made of them to date?
Yeah, I think going into the season there was definite optimism, and then when the season started, it's just faded away, isn't it? And it's been a really tough start for the Scarlets. Nothing seems to be going well for them. But that game on the weekend, they had to get a win. They're tricky games because everyone expects you to win. So even though the Scarlets have gone, you know, have gone really poorly, you ask anybody and they said, yeah, that's going to be our first win there.
Yeah.
And sometimes that pressure is like, oh, you know, it's really on now. Everyone expects us to win. So it just had to happen. They got the win. And hopefully now that can be the catalyst to kickstart and take a little bit of that pressure off, because it's when the pressure comes on, that's when it's even harder for them to play. They've got a good side.
Yeah,
they should be playing better than they are.
You're also on a bit of a hiding to nothing with a side like Zebra, aren't you? It's like when Wales play, you know, San Marino or something in the qualifiers, where if you win 9-0, it's only San Marino, and if you beat them 3-0 because they parked 11 men behind the ball the whole game, it's seen as a disappointment. So I don't know that it's perhaps a result that's going to live long in the memory. Like you say, it's all about what happens from here on in.
Yeah, it does. I think Halfpenny's going to be key for the Scarlets, I feel.
15 minutes back on the pod, Dan, and I'm surprised it's taken you this long to bring up your hero, Lee Halfpenny.
It's like going back in time, isn't it? He's he's just so good defensively. The reads, yeah, look, you know, everyone knows what I'm going to say about him, but he's such a valuable player still. You know, forget about what he's going to offer in attack for me. There's enough attackers in that back line. He can still do something as well on that front. But from a defensive perspective, you won't get a better 15 out there still. So he's the key man for me to that Scarlet side.
Oh, nice to see you've tried a bit of new material, Dan. You're dusting out the greatest hits now. It's like Noel Gallagher starting to play Wonderwall or something, isn't it? It's like, here we go.
Fall back on that.
Yeah, keen to get your thoughts on the players you'd like to see in Pivac's squad next week. And also, we're going to chat about the...
I mentioned one of them just then.
Well, exactly. Plenty more of this to come. And we're also going to talk about the state of club rugby in England and potentially if there are any knock-on effects for what that might mean in Wales as well. We're going to do all of that after this very quick break. Right, Dan, part two, here we go. What do you want to tackle first? The existential crisis that is club rugby in the Northern Hemisphere?
That's heavy.
Do you want to talk about the squads first?
Yeah. Let's take the state of the game, shall we, in over the bridge?
Yeah. Wow. So, obviously, there's the news that we had last week of Worcester, being suspended, relegated, gone into administration. Wasps, similar fate, likely to happen to them this coming week as well. What do you think this is kind of going to... What are we going to end up with? In England, you know, there's really serious talks about 10-team premiership being the solution, and it's kind of hard to look past that right now. The other mad story this week is in the Daily Mail, the London Irish owner saying that he'd be happy for someone just to take the club off his hands. You know, someone who could deal with who could take the funding. You know, who could fund it properly, not worried about selling the club. They could have it for a pound. We're in mad, mad times right now. What is the way out, do you think?
Well, I think that story coming out there with London Irish, where there could be more.
Yeah,
that's the worry. Would we be surprised if we saw more clubs coming forward with something like that? We wouldn't, and that's the biggest worry, isn't it? I remember when we first started this pod, and we looked back at the financials.
Yeah,
do you remember?
I do. I think this is when Dav was on, and Dav used to do rigorous homework for the pod, which you and I never did.
No, I think we said we needed to do some more homework, yeah. And we didn't. So yeah, maybe we should.
Yeah, 7 years on. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. We should, or we should just get Dav back on.
We should get Dav back on.
And yeah, it was not pretty reading then. It's got worse since, hasn't it? And it isn't going to get better, is it? And so yeah, it's beyond fragile.
Yeah,
the game there is to put a positive spin on it. That's the time when you can make change.
Yeah,
because if you don't change, then it's going to go. You know, does it go to 10, 9, 8? What happened? You know, how many? What do we end up with? You know, 8 clubs, then 6. We can make some big changes. Maybe bring in some other sides.
Well, let's talk about that because I did a bit of. Sketching on the back of a fag packet earlier in this week, once this kind of 10-team premiership idea was mooted, because a couple of the articles kind of seemed to all hinge around a few interviews, one with Rob Baxter, one with Simon Massey-Taylor, that I think is the CEO of Premiership Rugby, and that kind of not only mentioned a 10-team premiership, but a properly funded second-tier premiership as well. And that did get me thinking, because is there... We can't go on in Wales. Realistically, anyone who's involved with Welsh club rugby will be looking at this league and thinking it's just not generating any interest. I know that it's paying the bill. Well, in theory, paying the bills. It's keeping the clubs in existence for the time being, and the South African broadcast money brings an additional amount of revenue. But in the long term, you're never going to grow the game with this league because it's just a mishmash of teams that don't belong in the same league. Now, we said before, an Anglo-Welsh or perhaps a British and Irish league conjures up the imagination a bit more. But looking at that two-tier premiership thing, I would take right now if all four of those regions were parachuted into the second tier, just with an opportunity to play against the top tier Premiership sides.
Mm. Yeah, well, and also that would probably work. That would work for you. It'd work for the Premiership, wouldn't it? And it would also work for us. Well, if I can say us and them.
Yeah.
Because I think that's important, isn't it? It can't be quite a lot. If we look at the Welsh League, then a lot of these things that happen, they don't seem to benefit all parties.
Yeah.
And I think that's key moving forward. It's got to work for everyone and be longer term. Everything's been so short term for year after year. And could this be an opportunity to look forward, like a 15, 20 year plan? The problem is that everything, because financially it's so, so tight that you can't even look beyond surviving almost month by month. But that's the problem, isn't it?
This is the problem, is there's not enough money in the game to pay the players what they're, what they're remunerated right now. And that's hence the salary cap in England coming down. And, it's crazy that it was supposed to go up by 1.5 million next season. There's no way in hell that's going to happen now, surely. But there has to be a realisation that, look, this money isn't there right now, and we need to figure out a way of actually creating enough of an economy in rugby to sustain those clubs. We said it before, the thing for English sides has always been, well, they don't need us, they don't need our sides. And they kind of don't, but financially they probably always have done. There is the opportunity to grow something a bit bigger here. And if you need a two-tier system, there's not enough teams in the Championship who can raise the money to be able to do it. I had a look at this and thought, okay, we know that Ealing have got money, again, benefactor money, like Bath, like Saracens, like Worcester, like Exeter. It was all built on benefactor money. And when that benefactor goes, as Worcester, we've seen, and the clubs end up in the hands of the wrong people, then they can go pop. So to go back to that point, yes, Ealing are in there. Obviously, Cornish Pirates and Doncaster have been the other sides who've been kind of close to getting promotion and haven't for those kind of various stipulations around the ground and stuff like that. But other than that, what have you got? Jersey, maybe. And then you've got Wasps and Worcester into the mix. You're still a few sides short of being able to create something, meaningful second tier, because you can't ask Richmond and London Irish to then suddenly have a fully professional second tier unless it's going to get funded by the RFU or Premiership Rugby. So to me, that feels like there is an opportunity whereby you would have four sides, wherever they get placed, four sides that bring some more money into that second tier.
Can you see it happening there, realistically?
It's a great question. And this is where it comes back to me sketching on the back of a fag packet versus knowing the ins and outs of the contractuals with the URC. Can I see it happening? I think they have to explore every possible route for it happening. This is it's the first time really that those cracks in the financial game in England have become exposed. And I'm not saying that dropping the Welsh teams in is the answer, but could a two-tier Premiership be the answer? The problem that Premiership Rugby has had is that the same sides go up and down every single year, right? The only exception to that is, Exeter is obviously the example that's mooted, but that was 2009 they went up. After that, the last new side to get promoted to the English Premiership, do you know who it was?
No.
London Welsh. And we all know what happened there.
Yeah.
So, it almost feels like
that was a different world.
Yeah, it does.
That's how long ago it was.
Yeah, so, and then after that you've got, London Irish go down, they come back up, you've got whoever else did the same, Newcastle did the same thing. So, there's got to be a better solution. I feel like there is something there. As always though, Dan, when you say will it happen, self-interest is often the thing that gets in the way. If you're CEO of, of picking a side at random, Newcastle, Is that in your interest or is it not? If you're CEO at Harlequins, is that in your interest or not? Harlequins, you kind of, again, you someone writes a big check for you at the end of the season, is that in your interest to kind of relinquish the power? I don't know. If ever there was a time for change, it would be.
But it could be. It almost is, though, isn't it? Because even those clubs that say could continue in the same way for a period of time. That period of time is quite short still, because the books are so tight. But this is like a sustainability model almost, isn't it? For the entire league, that all of the clubs in England will be affected by Worcester going, and also Wasps. It's really sad. So who's next? And then who's next after that? They need to, even the ones that are a little bit, in a little bit less precarious position, because it's only because it's close, needs to be looked at.
Yeah, and I think that 10-team Premiership, I can definitely see happening, because you've already got two teams out of there. Are you going to have an 11-team Premiership, or are you actually going to take this opportunity? And like we say, there may well be another team that goes quite soon. Are you going to take that opportunity to say less is more? And that's a quote that has been used by Simon Massey-Taylor in this week. There is that realisation, I think. And he's an administrator who's pretty well respected in the industry. And, creating a sustainable model is something that has to happen this time round. And we're both in the same pot. The English clubs and the Welsh sides are in that same position. The other route is that they look at the RFU becoming more heavily involved. But it's not like they're swimming in money right now either. Mm-hmm. They've got debts of their own. They've got the grassroots game. They've got the women's game that needs to be grown. So it's really interesting to see where on earth this is going to end. But I don't know what the answer is. But for the first time, it does feel like there is grounds for us to be looking at this as a potential solution for the Welsh side. Quite what that means for the URC, I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, the Irish.
Well,
the South Africans.
If you were,
Scots.
Yeah, if you were the Irish, the Irish Union, and that league was then kind of shorn of the Welsh sides, would you be looking at some kind of British and Irish thing as a proper solution, or would you be thinking we'll play in the URC with a few less sides in there? There's just got to be less rugby played and more meaningful rugby played. That's the thing that we've got to get to.
That we can all get behind.
Yeah.
If we can get behind it, it's got a chance, isn't it?
That's another.
And we're jealous. We're massively jealous of what England have got. We are. Yeah. We're desperate to have a bit of that. Ireland are, we say they're happy with how it is. Are they really, though? They get success, but are they really, is it great for them? I question it, whether it is. I know winning is important, but to get behind something is that there's got emotion and real passion, I think is, you could say is almost better than winning. To get behind that, and if your side loses but you've given everything, it's a proper experience. That's what we're lacking. That's why we get excited when we talk like this, because it just isn't there.
I just feel that the disparate nature of the URC means that, okay, it's fine. Leinster do a great job of hosting games, and whether it's the Lions at home on a Friday night, people go and watch it because Dublin's is a well populated city. They've got this hugely successful side there, and people want to go and watch it. But would they be more excited about having a fixture against, let's say, a London Irish or a Gloucester or a Saracens in some kind of league fixture? They absolutely would.
And we'd like watching that. And they're not. Neither of those are our sides.
Yeah.
That to me kind of says it all. It'd be great.
Yeah. The question then is, can you get enough people who don't currently watch club rugby to get involved with that? Well, look, it would be a damn sight easier to do that than you are ever going to have. Getting some, I got lots of people, lots of my mates who love rugby, like love it when the Six Nations is on, love it when the Autumn Internationals are on, but they never ever think to watch a Premiership game and certainly not a URC game. How do you get people to how do you get people to switch over? Again, like Yestin, of this formerly of this parish for a very long time. I spoke to Yestin at the start of the season, and he said, I'm struggling to make the time to watch these games. He's like, I've only got a limited amount of time in my life, and do I want to spend it watching Cardiff versus the Lions, or Dragons versus versus Ulster, and it's like, well, no, not really in a meaningless competition.
Yeah, we're all sort of time poor, aren't we? We're stretched. We're under pressure because we don't have as much time as maybe there was before, for whatever reasons that is. And I love that. You've said this quite a few times over the years, that when you try and explain the league to your wife, you can't. Or you try to, and I think you do explain things well, but it doesn't, you know, if you do get it across, then it doesn't make sense. And if it doesn't make sense, then it isn't going to be a fantastic product, is it? And that, what we just mentioned there in terms of how, you know, what could be done, it makes sense, and then audiences can come behind. I mean, that's your world, not mine, but you've always said if it makes sense, people can get behind it. And if it makes sense, you can bring emotion into it. And we need, it's emotion that drives sales and drives, you know, drives reactions and gets people to engage, doesn't it?
But also it's a simple, you know, putting the marketing hat on, right? It's a simple solution that people want, right? So if you've got a headache, Dan, and you see an advert that says, take busy day, got a headache, take Panadol, get back to what you were trying to do, right? That's a really simple thing. It's like, right, I'm going to take that Panadol because I've got a headache, but I can't afford to have the day off work. So that solves a problem for me, right? That's a real simple marketing proposition. What bloody problem does the URC solve, apart from extracting a few quid from idiots like you and me who go, right, well, this is the sport for us. That pool is dwindling. How do you create something that is shiny and exciting to someone that says, I want to spend my time with this? And the URC is never going to be the answer. It's never going to be popular in Wales. It's only popular in Ireland because it works for the overall success of the national side. The English Premiership is different because it's founded on traditional club rivalries. We know that the finances haven't been able to make sense, so there's an opportunity to reset that. But can you create a product that is going to get a lot more people interested in rugby? You know, maybe we're just looking at this through a complete fantasy lens again, but if ever there was an opportunity to explore it, it's now.
I just don't think we are. I think there is, now is the time. With it being so fragile in England can have a really good look at it. They're the ones that can say, you know, probably yay or nay.
Mm.
You know, aren't they? They hold the keys, and it would be. It should at least be really, really explored.
Mm. And I did look on the same fag packet. I mean, it's a metaphorical fag packet. I don't smoke, but
it's a packet of Rothmans.
Yeah, there's a reference you haven't had for a while. Yeah, a packet of Rothmans. And yeah, I did have a look at another couple of scenarios whereby you looked at a British and Irish league. There's a couple of ways you could cut that too. You could have a two-tiered system. I suppose the danger with that is that you could still end up with quite a few slightly iffy fixtures in there that perhaps aren't quite as meaningful. Well, the other thing is you could split it into like a Wales, the West and Midlands conference, and then you have a Ireland, Scotland and London conference. Again, within that, you know, you look at the fixture list and you could very easily have Ulster versus London Irish. You could have, you know, Leinster versus Glasgow, for example. That's still not a bad fixture, isn't it? Mm. You know, so there are a couple of different ways of cutting it. Again, this is looking at it through, you know, through idealistic eyes without the mess that is surrounded by it. But to me, this is the situation where you've got to take a step back and go, look, are we going to create something genuinely interesting, or are we just going to paper over the cracks and hope to get through for another couple of seasons?
Yeah, I think that, you know, idealistic, optimistic eyes, it's now, you can dream now because it's so fragile. Dream up some ideas, you know, get excited, and then start stripping them back and looking at what actually is feasible and could be done. Will that happen? Probably not. But I'd like to see it.
Yeah. Right. Let's move back to on the pitch matters. As we said, Wayne Pivak names his squad next week. I think it's next week anyway. Again, need to do that homework, don't we? I'm pretty sure it is. But what players would you really like to see in that side, Dan? A few players who you're desperate to see in that Welsh squad.
We were speaking about him earlier, Nicky Smith.
Yeah.
I think that he's been in outstanding form for years. Mm. Not a year, years. And I'm really surprised that we haven't seen him. He I think early on in his career, there were, as there always is with props, there were question marks over his scrummaging.
Yeah.
How can you, you know, you need to learn the trade, don't you? His scrummaging's excellent.
Yeah.
And we know how good he is in the loose.
He jackals really well. He has got like a back row kind of physique. And when he gets over the ball, he causes, you know, if you're isolated, you don't want Nicky Smith over the top.
No. And he carries well as well. He's got that knack of spinning out of tackles. Is that the question mark, that he gets isolated and then there's a turnover? But watching it, he doesn't. The players are around him. We know what he's going to do. So his players will know what he's got to do. It's just you know, for the opposition, it's still difficult to stop. So he's somebody I'd like to see. I think we've now got an opportunity. We're probably going to see somebody at 10 because of the injury. The potential injuries there.
Yeah, I think Bigger will be all right.
He's always all right, isn't he?
Yeah, he's always all right.
Touch wood, yeah.
It does feel like we have this before every single campaign, that Dan Bigger hits off against someone. Yeah. And yeah, I think that the news with him is generally okay. Obviously, Anscombe hasn't been seen since going off a fortnight ago. So hopefully, again, there's better news to come there. Who would you like to see then as that kind of... Let's assume that both of them are fit. Who do you want to see as that other... the other fly half in that squad, Dan?
I feel Costello needs to be given a chance. I think he's played in a... The Scarlets haven't gone well, but I think he's played well in parts. Not perfect at all, but I think he's shown enough to be given a go. And we need to see him at an international level. I think autumn is the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know Bigger isn't going to go on forever, as much as I really want him to, and the same for Anscombe. So he's somebody. Jared is always talked about, isn't he? We know Pivac doesn't fancy him, and you know, in those big games where there's key moments, he, for whatever reason, he's... The game tends to move away from him, or there's
still a bit of a, in a very professional and prescribed era, he is a bit of a maverick 10, isn't he? In an era that relies a lot more on game management. And I think that's what Pivac's kind of concern is. I don't think he's been in sparkling form. He had a good game, you know, showed that brilliance to put Thomas Young away for the try yesterday, but I don't think he's been in spectacular form. And I think in order for Pivac to have a look at him, he would have to be tearing up trees. So I think it's almost it's academic. I think he's way down the list for Pivac.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Jack Morgan.
God, where do you go with these sevens? I suppose that Basham going off yesterday didn't look particularly good.
That's a nasty injury.
Again, we don't know at this stage what length he'll be out for, but that didn't look especially promising. So I suppose there is a bit less competition in that seven berth, but you would expect Tommy Reffel as the incumbent to be in that squad. Thomas Young is probably battering down the door.
I think Thomas Young, I think we need to see him during this autumn. He was so good, and I really do think that, for Cardiff.
Mm.
Yesterday, and I think it's only fair that he...
How many sevens can you have in a squad, Dan? I mean, Tipperick surely is a shoo-in. Reffel was the guy with the shirt in South Africa. That's two, and then can you have three sevens in there? Can you then have Jack? Because I think the thing that worked well in South Africa, as we said with Murph a couple of times, there was a balanced back row: Lydia out and out six, Reffel out and out seven, Toby out and out eight. Do you go back to a twin fetcher type scenario, or do you actually go, do you know what, this is really tough, but Jack Morgan's going to miss out, or Thomas Young is going to miss out?
I mean, leadership comes into it, doesn't it? But you know, in terms of whether Tipper, do we leave out, you know, Tipper? Do we let him sort of?
He'll start seven.
He will. And
deservedly, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, moving forward, do we look at the autumn? Playing some of these other players, looking at different comp. The biggest problem we've got in the Welsh side, I think, is the balance. We've got fantastic players, but it's getting that balance right, isn't it? And that's the balance in the back row. it's the balance in the front row. The second row, I think we're all right, but we have made errors there. And then in the backs is that the centre partnership, which we've got to get right, which then, you know, brings either imbalance or balance to the inside guys and the outside players. Mm. That's the hardest thing for us.
I think Pivac has definitely as close as he has been to knowing his best 15 right now, I would say. I think those two second rows in Beard and Will Rowlands will start with Alan Wynne-Jones on the bench, which is, you know, an amazing position to be in, but I think they've made those shirts their own. Again, in the back row, there are options, but I think it will be a genuine six, a genuine seven, and a genuine eight. And by six, it's either a Dan Lydia or possibly a Christian's pure kind of, you know, an athlete who offers something in addition, you know, that line out work that he does because he's played so much at lock. I think, I don't know. I mean, he's one for me. If there's one player I really want to see this autumn, it's Christian's.
On the bench, sure.
Against New Zealand, I would probably start Lids, but I think we've got a real X factor player here. We need to get him game time. We need to get him game time in a red shirt before the World Cup campaign, because I honestly think he could be the starting six there. I know he's wearing seven for Exeter, but I think he's at international level, certainly to start with, I think six would probably be his best position. Because look, we know how poor our line out has been for years. You know, some of the stuff that he's done in the games I've seen for Exeter this season, defensively, and, you know, offering you a line out option, I thought he's so quick off the floor, you know, to get up and spoil ball. And then when you add into the mix that you've got Rowlands and Beard, who are both strong when it comes to line out jumping, Tipperick, Faletau, also options. That to me, I think, I'm not saying that you just pack it with loads of different options, but you've got players in there who are really accomplished line out operators. So to me, whether you throw him in against New Zealand or not, I think all comes down to what he's like as a character and whether he'd be phased or not. My gut says he probably wouldn't, but perhaps that's the one where you start Lydia and after that you have a real good look at him. But for me, he needs to get some good game time at international rugby.
Yeah, he's definitely a real prospect, isn't he? And our line-out, having as many line-out options as possible is going to help us, because our line-out has been, we've had issues there, haven't we? You know, perennial issues for years. It goes well for a period, then it goes wandering for a longer period. And that's when we start talking about parachuting in a line-out consultant and being genuine about it, don't we? But that doesn't happen. But it's hard to look past Lydia, isn't it? Because that balance, when he's there, it gives you... I feel confident. And the players around him must feel so confident because you just know exactly what he's going to do. And I don't think teams want to face him.
And we asked a certain former Wales head coach this morning, who knows a thing or two about selection, which of the current crop of players he would be most excited about picking if he was in charge. And what was his answer?
Lydia.
Yeah, I mean, it says it all. It does. Yeah, I think it does say that. And fair play to Lydia, he has added more to his game and the ball carrying element. But the thing that is fascinating, I'm not writing him off at all, because he is so aggressive in the defence. And again, when we've spoken to other players who've played with and against him, they say they're genuinely scared when they're playing against him because he hits you so hard. And, you know, it's not like just a hit in the chest. It's like around the ankles and around the knees. He's just so aggressive in defence that it does offer a great opportunity for turnovers. So I would expect him to start against New Zealand. And let's be honest, he's not going to let you down, is he?
Oh, no. No, he never does. And his leadership qualities as well, which would be key. So yeah, I'd for me, he would definitely get the nod against New Zealand. And yeah, then we've got some, then we can maybe change things up a little bit, you know, during that autumn campaign. And it's weird, isn't it? Where his point of difference is something that you think, well, surely that's what most players can do. Well, yeah,
but he does it
but
so
not,
well.
But not like he can. Yeah. And that's his point of difference, isn't it? And he is, time and time again, over and over again, and he loves it, doesn't he? That smile on his face, right, you're coming down my channel, chop, and it hurts every single time.
It does. Right, well, yeah, not too long to find out who's in that squad, and we'll be reacting to that. Hopefully, Dan, it's not going to be this long before we have you on the podcast again. And yeah, we'll get some good face to face pods over the autumn. Managing your game time as usual.
That's it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to coming down here again. And yeah, we'll identify one of those autumn games, shall we?
Sounds good to me. Thank you very much indeed, Dan. Thank you to everyone for listening. If you haven't had a chance to listen to our special with Scott Otten from midweek, I'd recommend you do that. Really, really interesting chat with Scott about his mental health struggles post hanging up the boots. And a big thank you to him for doing that. And as always, a thanks to him for sponsoring the podcast as our sponsor with his coffee brand, So Coffee Trades. So yeah, if you want to support them and get some great quality coffee, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. But we will be back to chat rugby with you very, very soon. Right, thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.